And we're holding on page 50 in Bava Metzia, the last line, middle of Os Yudzayin. We're in the middle of learning the story of Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim, the Machlokas, about Tanu Shalach Noi, where Rebbe Eliezer was insisting on his opinion against all the other Chachamim. We talked about last time what happened to Achud Ab Lahatis, but in the end, even though there was a baskol in Rebbe Eliezer's favor, still total Rebbe Shemayim, and we said, even Hashem approved of what they did, and we said, the last thing we said was that they birchuhu, that they put Rebbe Eliezer in nidui, that he can't attend the Beis Medrash anymore and be with the other Chachamim. The Omru, so now the Chachamim said, mi yelech v'yodiyah, who's going to go and inform him? We can't, the fact is, if he's excluded from the Beis Medrash, somebody has to tell him. Omru lahem Rebbe Akiva ani yelech, so Rebbe Akiva tells them, I will go. And in fact, Rebbe Akiva had formerly been Rebbe Eliezer's Talmud. Now he's great enough that he's basically a chaver of Rebbe Eliezer, but he still could consider himself as Talmud. But I'll go because I'll break the news to him gently. Shema yelach adam sheinu hogun, somebody who's not so erlich might go and tell him the idea and inform him, and thereby he'll destroy the entire world because Rebbe Eliezer will be so insulted and Hashem is going to stand up for his honor that it'll have terrible consequences. So at least I'll go and break the news gently to him in a way that won't impinge on his covenant. What did Rabbi Akiva do? He put on black clothes and wrapped himself in black. In those times, it wasn't like nowadays, you know, you wear black for Shabbos and Yom Tov and Simchas and whatnot. Back then, they would wear white for such occasions. Here we have, for example, even closer to our times, the Tzemach Tzedek, for example. The reason why the picture we have of the Tzemach Tzedek is him wearing a white kapota and a white strangle is because there was a guy peeked in through the window on Shabbos when he was saying Chassidus and memorized what he looked like and went home and drew the picture. So closer to our times even, people would wear white for Simcha Dika occasions, and that's how it was back then also. You wore black, it was a person who wore black, it was a simon of Avelis. So he dressed himself like that in black. The Yoshev Lafon of Berichu Galen Amos, and he went to Rebbe Eliezer and sat 4 Amos away from him. Omalei Rebbe Eliezer, Akiva Mayim Yemayim, what's today different than other days? Amalei, so Rabbi Akiva tells him, Rebbe, kimidrumali shechaveracha delin mimcha. It seems to me that your colleagues, myself included, have separated themselves from you. In other words, he's making it sound like it, almost as though we put ourselves in cheirem. Obviously, he didn't want to tell Rabbi Eliezer bluntly that they did that to you, but Rabbi Eliezer, of course, got the message. So that's why he's wearing black, as if like one menuda, a person who's take in mourning for being in nidui, would take do that, would wear black clothing. So then Rabbi Akiva did the same kind of thing. Afu korab godav, so Rabbi Eliezer ripped his clothes, v'cholatz min olav, and he took off his shoes. Now, the Tosfos discusses, and the Ramban over here discusses, that not necessarily is a menuda actually chayev to do such things. The Gemara has a whole sugya in Moed Katan about nidui, about what a menuda is required to do, whether he has to tear kriya and whether he has to take off his shoes is not so simple. But over here, even if you say he's not required to, then it's he's doing it as a sign of Avelos, because he now he's being separated from the company of the rest of the Chachamim. Rebbe Eliezer was saying. Rebbe Eliezer, he realized, he got the message that he had been put in Nidui, so he went and did these things. So again, not necessarily because he's actually required to as a Menuda, but rather just because of Tzar. And in fact, there are Mephoshim who explain that maybe even it wasn't true nidui. It may not have been true nidui. In fact, the Gemara mentions in Moed Katan and in other places that you really shouldn't put a Talmud Chacham in nidui anyway. If he needs a punishment, there are different other punishments available. So rather, it would be more like they're excluding him from the Beis Medrash, but for him, for Rebbe Eliezer, whose life is Torah, that's tantamount to nidui. Anyway, so he ripped his clothes and then took off his shoes. The nishmat the yoshma gabe karka, and he slipped off the chair. He removed himself from the chair or whatever he had been sitting on and sat on the ground. Zogu ein of demois, and his eyes started flowing with tears. Now, it wouldn't have been on the face of it a simple matter for him to say, you know what? Okay, I concede. I'm willing to accept what the chachamim say, and then I'll go back to the Beis Medrash. He couldn't. The fact is, he had learned from his Rebbeim this way, that this kind of thing is Torah. And as we talked about last time, technically it may have even been correct, just that the Chachamim was saying against him, whether because of Gzeira or whatever the reason is, so therefore it wouldn't be true to Torah for him to just say, you know what, then fine, I changed my mind, just to be accepted back in the Beis Medrash. So there's nothing he can do at this point but cry over the situation that there's this impasse over here.
nonsense. Like, you know, you put someone in Italy for a warning to someone.
So, no, you're putting some of those various reasons the Gemara explains in Brachas why a person might be put in Nidui. One of them is for disobeying the Chachamim, which is what he was doing over here. But nevertheless, he couldn't go and just say, fine, I changed my mind, because that wouldn't be true to the Torah that he had learned. In fact, we find in a number of places in Shas, Rabbi Eliezer never said something that he hadn't learned from his Rebbeim. So when he's saying over here that this type of oven is Torah, which triggered off the whole story over here, he learned from his Rebbeim that way. He can't go and alter that just in order to be readmitted to this Medrash.
So the whole concept of Zochin Mamre Daper is the same thing. When he knows for sure that
That is true. Nonetheless, though, the fact is, again, especially we talked about last time, not even all the Chachamim were there. And certainly, anyway, you don't have the concept of Zochin Mamre, because this is after the Korban. They're not sitting in the Lushkas HaGozes anyhow. So, and we talked about that Rabbi Eliezer had reasons to think that they're not doing purely Al Pi Torah, so he can't just go and concede yet. We find something similar, by the way, a few generations earlier, we find with Akavya ben Mahalalel. He was attacking in the times of the Bais HaMikdash. And there also, you have a number of halachas that he argued with the Chachamim, and they also ended up putting him in Nidui as well. So now, actually, what happens is, the Mishnah in Adius tells us, before he passed away, he told his son, I want you to follow the other Chachamim in these halachas. So the son says, why? I mean, you taught all these years, not like that. And Akavya tells him like this. He tells, I learned from the Merubim. I learned from many Chachamim before me that this is the din. They learned from Merubim also. They learned from their Rabbeim that the din is different. So therefore, so each one, they were equally balanced, and not necessarily does either of us have to concede to the other. But you, my son, where do you know these halachas from? Only from me. I'm a yachid. Therefore, you should go according to the rabbin. So now, in the same vein, in other words, if it had been, for example, what Rabbi Eliezer's children are going to do, by all means, they should follow the Rav, but Rabbi Eliezer himself can't do that.
So he's in limbo.
Basically, yeah. That's why he cried. Zolgorain of Demaris is crying over, we have this impasse over here. He so desperately wants to be with the Chachamim and be in the Beis Medrash, which is his life, but he can't. At that point, because he was crying over how he had been treated, which he considered to be Einah, this is the reason why we're bringing this in, is because of Einah's Tvarim, the world was struck at that point, Shlish Vizesim, one third of the olive crop was damaged, or Shlish Vichitim, one third of the wheat, or Shlish Vesaurim, and one third of the barley. Why Dafka these things? Marshall says because these are all the things that are basic necessities of life. So therefore, more than anything else, then those suffered as a result of Rabbi Eliezer crying over how he had been treated. And then Marshall goes on to say, so why one third of them? Well, when you think of it, one third is a mute compared to two thirds. Rabbi Eliezer is a mute compared to the rabbin. But there, in his honor, this happened to stand that Hashem is standing up for him. But nevertheless, it was only a minority of the crop, just as he was a mute. The Maharal gives a more detailed explanation that the olives you use them for olive oil, which produces light, which is the highest thing among us human beings. Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or is the first thing the Eved created. Then you have chitim, then you have seorim as the other extreme, as animal food, and chitim is kind of in between. It's human food, but it's not as ethereal and as high as light. So therefore, these three things, in other words, representing that all. That everything was damaged at that point. The highest, the lowest, and the in-between, kind of. Some say, even a batch of dough that a woman had in her hands at that point would swell up instead of rising normally, like it's supposed to, it would swell up as in it would spoil.
Just Sam,
whatever day of the week it happened to be. A woman would be baking dough, and all of a sudden she noticed that the dough in her hands was spoiled because of this effect of what had happened to Rabbi Eliezer. The Maharal makes a point over there that dough represents as a mixture, as a blend of different things, and therefore it represents like the more of the gashmius of the world as opposed to Torah, which is where we have one Torah, where you have, compared to that, you have many different ingredients that go into a dough, and that's how badly that was affected. Tana, then we learn in a Braisa. Ach Godol Hoyba Usayun. There was a tremendous blow on that day. Ach would be Melosh and Maka. The other gear says, Ach Godol, tremendous anger. Shabachol Mokum Shanosan by Ainov, Rabbi Eliezer. Anything that Rabbi Eliezer gazed at with his eyes, Nisraf was burnt. We have other examples in the Gemara where the gaze of the Chachamim can have terrible effects on things. So here, everything Rabbi Eliezer is looking at is set on fire. The Afram Gamliel.
The same of Rashbi?
No, that's Rabbi Lazar. That's Rabbi Lazar, the son of Rashbi. This is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. The Afram Gamliel hoya bob esfina. At that time, also Rabbi Gamliel was traveling on a ship. Now Rabbi Gamliel was the nasi. When they had voted to put Rabbi Eliezer in nidui, Rabbi Gamliel would have had to sign off on that. By the way, as we're going to see in a few lines in the Gemara, they were brothers-in-law too. Rabbi Eliezer was married to Rabbi Gamliel's sister, and nevertheless, he had no choice because again, they had to preserve, as he's going to go on to say now, he had to preserve the principle of Acher Rabban Lahatas and prevent machloikas. So Rabbi Gamliel was on a ship, and a storm blew up in the sea and was threatening to sink the ship and drown him. Omar, Rabbi Gamliel realizes, it seems to me that the reason why this is happening to me is because of what we did to Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Omar al Raglav, he stood on his feet. Imagine him standing on the deck of the ship with storm waves going every which way, and he stood up and said, "V'omer debonu shalom, goli v'yadu l'fanecha." It's known and it's revealed and known before you. Shaloi l'chavoid yasisi. I didn't do this for my covered. V'loi l'chavoid beis abba asisi. I didn't do this for the covered of my father's household. Elo l'chavoid cha. I did it for your honor. Shaloi yubu machlokas b'Yisrael. That machlokas should not continue to proliferate among the Jewish people. It would mean, in other words, other chachamim might think they could do maybe them. Eliezer is of the caliber to be able to argue with all the Chachamim, but not everybody is of that caliber. Other Chachamim in later generations are going to think they can do the same kind of thing and go against the Rabbim. And in our times ourselves, many people might follow Rabbi Eliezer, and we're going to have two different Torahs, a Torah of Rabbi Eliezer and a Torah of everybody else, and we can't do that. Nochayom Mizapoy, and the storm calmed down. The sea storm calmed down. By the way, Dodos HaRishonim points out that after this, actually, now we do have several stories where Rabbi Gamliel was kind of overbearing towards Rabbi Yeshua, which is eventually why they deposed him as Nasi and appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the whole story with Tfilos Avos Rishus. He relates that to this story over here. In the sense, Rabbi Gamliel acted purely l'shem Shemayim, not just in this, but in the other stories as well. But what happened was, until then, the top three Chachamim in the Yeshiva at that time were Rabbi Gamliel the Nasi, Rabbi Yeshua the Av Beis Din, and Rabbi Eliezer, who we learned last time, is the Chacham. He's the third in command, and he's the one responsible for practical psak halacha. So until Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Eliezer of our story. So now, Dodos HaRishonim explains, until now, whenever you had, if there was ever an argument between the two of them, you could have the third one mediate. Now with Rabbi Eliezer out of the picture, when Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua clashed, there was nobody to mediate it, and that's how things developed. Things went from bad to worse, and you have the story with Rosh Hashanah, in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, with the date of Yom Kippur, and a story in Masechet Bechoros, with Rabbi Tzadik and a Bechor of his, and then Tfilos Avos Rishus, and that was the last straw, and then at that point they deposed Rabbi Gamliel. So it all came from this, that because if Rabbi Eliezer had been around doing any of those stories, there wouldn't have been such a thing that got so out of hand like that. They could appoint somebody to replace Rabbi Eliezer as far as the position, but he wouldn't be of the generation of and of the caliber of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. I mean, of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua to be the mediator between them. So they're lacking that. So the Gemara continues. Ima Sholem Dveistu Dirab Eliezer. Ima Sholem, that was her name. Some say that Ima is a title and her actual name was just Sholem, but in any case, Dveistu Dirab Eliezer. She was Rabbi Eliezer's wife. Achse Dirab Gamliel Havoy. And she was also Rabbi Gamliel's sister. That's what we're saying. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel are brothers in law. Ma'ahum Maisiv Eilach. From that story onward, Loi Habas Shavkale Rabbi Eliezer L'Meipal Al Ape. She would not allow Rabbi Eliezer to do Nefilas Apayim. Because in Nefilas Apayim, it's not just, you know, we have a standard thing that we say. We say Kapitol Chof Hei of Tillim. In principle, during Nefilas Apayim, a person can daven and bet ois by the Eidishter, whatever it is he wants. And so she's concerned that now Rabbi Eliezer is going to daven that Hashem should take his side on this whole thing, and her brother Rabbi Gamliel was going to get the worst of it. As it is, he'd already been in storm because of it. So she wouldn't allow him to fall on his face. Now, a couple of the Mephoshim ask, what, is she supposed to be shadowing him 24-7? How can she prevent that he's never going to do Nefilas Apayim? So the Beis Yosef brings from Talmidim of the Rashba, the Ritva brings it in his Chedushim over here, the Ritva himself was one of the Talmidim of the Rashba, so it works out. But anyway, they say that we see from this that Nefilas Apayim has to be done right after Shemana Esrei in order to be effective. So all she has to do is prevent him right after Shemana Esrei from doing Nefilas Apayim. And then if he does it later on in the day, it won't be as effective. From this we learn, Taka, that Nefilas Apayim, when it's done, has to be done as soon as possible after Shemana Esrei. There is, by the way, there's a mimer of the Mittel Rebbe in Shari Tshuva, I think it is, that talks about the Mila of Nefilas Apayim, about how what we accomplish, that you have it's on an even higher level of connection to Elikus than Shemana Esrei. Shemana Esrei is when Olam Atzilus, we're standing in front of the Eibishter, but Nefilas Apayim is something even greater than that. Yes. There's also in the Reb Chaim Vital talks about it in a couple of places in his Sforim that Nefilas Apayim is like the Zivug. It's like you have, there is the ultimate connection between the Eidishter and us, between the Kutcha Bricho Shchinte, between the Shchina and us here on earth, and therefore, so again, it has to be right after Shemana Esrei. From this also we see maybe that when you have people are always making one or another kind of excuse why to skip Tachnun and Nefilas Apayim, not necessarily is that the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. So today, Taka was Yud Kislev. It's Chagagola. It's the Taka reason not to, but yeah, not. Yeah.
I heard Hudai the three times of the Nefilas Apayim, like, you know, three times on the day that we have to do it, he doesn't see Vinegino.
Weird.
So it was concentration.
Mm-hmm. Three times, we only do it twice, by Shachas and by Mincha. I don't know. What?
Until
him, I say. All right, I hear. Interesting. Okay, anyway. So she wouldn't allow him to do Nefilas Apayim, at least not right after Shemana Esrei. Well, Hahu Yoyma Reish Yarchahava. Came time, one day, it was Rosh Chodesh, the Ichla Flabein Molei L'Choser. She mixed up whether it was a Chodesh Molei or Chodesh Choser. Now, you don't do Nefilas Apayim on Rosh Chodesh. So she thought, Rashi explains, she thought that it's a Chodesh Choser, that it's a 29, past month was a 29-day month. That means, therefore, that means the 30th day is going to be Rosh Chodesh, because it's going to be the first of the new month, and there's no Nefilas Apayim, because it's Rosh Chodesh. So, therefore, on that day, she didn't bother shadowing him. So that's according to Rashi. Marsha points out, you would have to say, according to that, that it would mean, evidently, that if it had been a Chodesh Molei, don't you have 2 days of Chodesh then, the 30th and the 1st, and you don't say Tachnun on either one, evidently, according to that, they would not consider, when there was a 30-day month, they would not keep the 30th day as Chodesh, only the 1st of the new month. So in that case, then, she thought it was a Chodesh Choser, and it's 29 days, and the next day is Aleph of the next month, and it's Chodesh. Meanwhile, it was a Chodesh Molei, and it's Lamed. And she didn't realize. But then Marsha says that the fact is, we're saying Hahu Yoyma Reish Yarchahava, we're saying that day was Rosh Chodesh, which suggests that it was actually Rosh Chodesh. So Marsha says the other way around. It was the 30th. It was in fact Rosh Chodesh. She figured, therefore, what happened was, it's a 30-day month, therefore we're going to have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So today I don't need to shadow him, because the 30th is the first day of Rosh Chodesh. I don't need to shadow him tomorrow either, because she thought that tomorrow will be the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Meanwhile, it turned out it's a Chodesh Chaser, and there's only 1 day Rosh Chodesh, and then the next day he had his opportunity. Yeah, so according to that, Maharam Shif says something similar, although he's bothered by the fact, again, you have the question saying, Ahu Yoyma Reish Yarchav, then it wasn't, in fact, Rosh Chodesh, according to that way of looking at it. Whatever the case, the point is, there was a day that she thought was Rosh Chodesh, and it really wasn't. Ikadamri, another version, is she knew what day it was, but Osa Anya, a poor person, came, Bekoya Bava, and was standing by the door, V'apikale Rifta, and she brought out bread for him, punked at that time. Either way, so now, Rebbe Eliezer had the opportunity to do Nefilas Apayim. Ashkachte de Nofal al Anpe. She came back into the room and found Rebbe Eliezer doing Nefilas Apayim. Omrele, she says, Kum, get up, katalte la'ochi, you're killing my brother. Because again, not necessarily, not like he's deliberately going to go say, Hashem, punish him, Gamil, but he's going to cry out to Hashem for what had been done to him, and Hashem would stand up for him and take it out on Ram Gamil, who had to sign off on it. Sure enough, Adahochi, as they were talking, Nofak Shippurim, Ram Gamliel, the Shochiv, a shofar was blown in Ram Gamliel's house, announcing that he had passed away. Omalom no yadat, he says, how did you know that my being able to do Nefilas Apayim is going to have such a devastating, terrible effect? Omrele, she says, Kach mekublani mi beis avi abba. This is what I have by Kabbalah from my aunt, from my father's father's household. Meaning, Rashi points out, she's the sister of the Nasi. That means she's a descendant from Malchus Beis David. So we have a tradition going all the way back to David HaMelech. Kol ha-sha'orim nin olin chutz mishareina. That, as we said earlier in the Sugya, all the gates in Shemayim are closed except for the gates of Einah. So therefore, she says, in other words, I knew because you suffered such an Einah that when you cry, when you have a chance to cry out to the Eivishter at a time when it will be maximally effective, namely at Nefilas HaPayim, it will have effect. And that's why all this time I was preventing you, and now I missed my opportunity. Rashi says that it means that she learned from David HaMelech. Tosfos points out, not necessarily, the posik that when we said before, Kol Sha'onin Olin Chutz Mishara Einah, was actually something that we learned from a posik in Amos. So rather, Tosfos says that no, it doesn't actually mean Beis Avi Abba going all the way back to David HaMelech. It means it was a tradition in the family of the Nisim. By the way, Doris Rishonim goes through the story and explains, based on various lines of evidence, he explains that Rav Gamliel, now we would think, the way we read it over here in the Gemara, it sounds like these things happen one after the other. He was put in Nidui, and very shortly after that was this time, you know, that she failed to shadow him the one day, and he didn't fill us a pain. Doris Rishonim makes some calculations based on various lines of evidence, and concludes that it was something like 20 years in between. So for 20 years, every day, she's guarding him every day to make sure he doesn't do accept on Shchodesh and other days when you don't say Tachnun, and then the one time she slipped up, yeah. Between you were saying Ima Shalom and Rabbi Eliezer. Yeah. The Gemara says, Tonan Abanam, Hama'aneh Sager, a person mistreats a ger, as we talked about, Einas Devarim, all this time, that he calls him, he says derogatory things to him, hurts his feelings, whatever, over b'shloisha lavim. Then he's over on three lavim, as the Gemara is going to go list out. And if he oppresses him over the bays, then he's over on two lavim. Rashi says just says loichze means doichakoi, but then in the next Rashi, where one of the psukim that the Gemara is going to quote, then Rashi explains it means to press him to repay a debt that you know he doesn't have. You're not allowed to do that to any yid, but now with a ger, there's even more lavim involved in doing that. Different other mafoshim talk about different other possibilities of what loichze can mean, among others that you make him work harder than he needs to, or other possibilities. Whatever the case, we're saying that a person is over. Well, the question is, Maishna Ma'ana. So what's the difference between these two things? When it comes to Ma'ana, when it comes to treating him unfairly or hurting his feelings, Dichtivi Shloisha Lavin, and there are three Lavin in that connection, namely the Pasuk says, in Mishpatim V'gerloi Soina, do not mistreat a ger, and in Kedoshim V'chiyogu Itchem Ger V'atzchem Loisoinu Oisa, if a ger lives among you in your land, do not treat him unfairly, and the third one in Bahar, Loisonu Isha Samiso, do not mistreat one person, his fellow yid, the Ger Bachala Miso, and of course a Ger is included in your fellow yid, so there's the three for Einah. Well, the question is, Loichze Nami Gimoksivi. Well, don't you have three for Loichze as well? Number one, Veloiso Chatzenu, when the Pasuk says in Mishpatim, the Ger Loisone, it continues, Veloiso Chatzenu, do not oppress him. Later on, you have also in Parshas Mishpatim, the Ger Loisochatz, do not oppress a Ger. And the third one, also in Mishpatim, Veloisiyolei Kenosha, don't act to him like a creditor, like to demand from him the payment when you know you can't afford it. Veger Bechlalu, and again, a ger is in that category. So there are three for either one. Why are we saying three for one and two for the other? Ella, no, we have to say what it meant was Echad Zeva Gimel, either one, the person is over on three lavin. The Gemara continues, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol says, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol is the same as Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus from the previous story. So he says, Mipnei Mahiz Hira Torah B'lamed Vav Mekoymes, why does the Torah warn us in 36 places, Ra'amilav Amem Vav Mekoymes, others saying 46 places, Beger, about a ger, not to hurt his feelings and not to treat him unfairly, etc. Mipnei Shesurai Ra, the reason is because his surai is bad. There's a lot of different explanations what Surai Ra means. Rashi in some other places explains that it means that it, something like his essential nature is bad. Meaning, in other words, where did he come from? He came from a Goyish background, after all. So now, he had the gumption to become a ger. But after all, his natural inclination that he was born with and grew up with is to live a Goyish lifestyle. So therefore, if you treat him unfairly, he may go and revert back to that. there's a number of other possibilities. What Surah Ra means, another possibility is that it's related that Surah is related to the word Yisoid, which would also mean like his foundation is bad. It can mean that the Aruch explains it Meloshon Sa'ur, like leaven, like sourdough in him, like you have. Like imagine you put a piece of sourdough in dough, and it affects the whole thing the same way. Like you have something within him that spreads very easily, and it can easily cause him to cause him to go off the derech.
In the ritual in the morning, in the Tfilat HaTzrit, you say Hashem Shomer and Gerim.
Hashem watches over the Gerim, yeah. So where do we get 36 or 46? So I mean, where does that machlokas and mitzvahs go start counting the psukim? So Tosfos says the opinion that says 46 is because let's say you have times when the Torah says do this mitzvah, don't do this ki gerim heyisim, because you were gerim. So it doesn't actually say, for example. So let's say in 36 places it says don't treat a ger unfairly, but then there's a few extra places where it just says do this other mitzvah, don't do this other mitzvah ki gerim heyisim. The symbolism of 36 or 46, Eitz Yosef says, is that 36 is the number of things for which a person is chayiv kares. The Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Krisos says there's 36 things for which a person is chayiv kares. So now, equal to that, then, is the number of times the Torah warns you not to mistreat a ger. As far as the 46, that would be that plus the Aseret HaDibros, showing how severe it is. He was saying, by the way, that Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol is the one who says this. By the way, there's a medrash, actually, where Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol himself, there's a story where Achilas Hager, the famous Ger Achilas, some say he's identical with Unkelos, some say he's a different one. Anyway, one time he asks Rabbi Eliezer, it's actually in Medrash Rabbah, in last week's parasha. When Yaakov says, "When Nosam Lechem Lechol Vergad Lubush," so the Medrash shells on that pasuk the following story that Achilas asks Rabbi Eliezer, the pasuk says about a ger, but oy have ger. It says that in Parshas Eikev, Hashem loves the ger, losses loy lechem besimla, that Hashem gives him bread and clothing. Big deal. I mean, I come from a rich background. Remember, he was the emperor's son-in-law, not a nephew or whatever, you know. My servants even, they wouldn't even look at such things because we have such richer food than that. What's the big thing that Hashem gives him lechem besimla? So Rabbi Eliezer kind of fobs him off and says, what's your problem, Rabbi? What's your problem? Yaakov Avinu asks for the same thing, lechem lechel v'egad lovish. Some of the Mefarshim say that he thinks, what did you become a ger in order to get riches and things in this world? That's not a reason to become a ger. Anyway, then he goes and asks Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua explains to him that lechem lechel v'egad lovish actually means great ruchniyistik of things. It means he's going to become a Talmud Chacham and have the bread of Torah. It means that his descendants are going to be great Talmud Chacham who teach Torah to the people. And the Gemara says, you know what? It's a good thing he went to Rabbi Yeshua. If he had only had Rabbi Eliezer and stopped right there, he might well have gone back to his goyish ways. So maybe Taka Rabbi Eliezer learned from that and now says this vote over here to be very careful with the feelings of a ger.
So from the Shvarav to Rabbi Eliezer, if he understood well, like he would have never been a ger.
No, so the point is, in the story, it seems that Achilas already became a ger, and now he's asking this question to Rabbi Eliezer, but he might have given it up and gone back to his old goyishkeit if it hadn't been for Rabbi Yeshua, for Rabbi Yeshua talking to him and explaining to him, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Now, what does it mean? The Pasuk is saying, don't oppress and don't mistreat a ger because you were gerim in Mitzrayim. So what does one have to do with the other? Tonam, Meshum Rab Nosson Omer, Mum Shabach, Al Tremel Achavrach. It means you yourself have a defect. Don't say it to somebody else. You yourselves were gerim. So don't make fun of a ger and saying, hey, you don't belong here, you're a stranger, where'd you come from? Because you have the same thing as you have the same situation in Mitzrayim. In fact, that is one of the many explanations why the Eibush has put us through 210 years in Mitzrayim with slavery and all that. One reason is Taka, in order to develop this kind of sensitivity by a Yid, that now when you have the poor and the oppressed and the ger and the this and that, we have a little more sympathy for them because we can relate it back to our own experiences there. Vahainu de amri inshi. This is like the expression that people say. If a person has in his family, somebody who was hanged, loy neimalei lechavrei zekoyf benisa, such a person from that family, should not say to somebody else, hang up that fish. He himself, he has a relative who was hanged, so it would be a gnai for him to even mention the concept of hanging, even as far as a fish. So the same way, you were ger in Mitzrayim, don't even think of casting that up against somebody else, because all that does is it reflects badly on you. The last couple of Mishnayos of the Perek deal with having dealt with various issues of buying and selling and Einar throughout the Perek. So it finishes off with a number of dinim that relate to storekeepers. As far as what now you want to have, you know, you're a storekeeper, you want to have a competitive advantage, you want to have an advantage over your competitors, but what are you allowed and not allowed to do in terms of halacha? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yechalak achen v'ni kloyes ve'gozim l'tinoikis. Rabbi Yehuda says that a storekeeper should not give out toasted grain or nuts to children. Like he might have, you know, like you have a candy jar on the counter, and a kid comes in and he can take a candy. Don't do that, says Rabbi Yehuda. But they should not give him love after, because then he's accustoming all the children to come to him, and then it's an unfair advantage against everybody else. The Chum says it's allowed, because the Gemara explains that he can say to the other storekeepers, you know what, give him better candy, give him better nash. So he's not making them lose out. I assume Mustama, you know, if it starts getting out of hand, then Basin can probably step in. I mean, if he starts giving out nuts and the next storekeeper gives out plums, as the Gemara gives an example, and then the next one figures he needs to one-up him and give something else, eventually Basin might step in and deal with it. But in and of itself, to ask for it right off the bat, the Chum say we don't need to do that. Next, V'lo yifchis et ha'shar. You're also not allowed to lower the prices. Because again, then it's an unfair advantage against everybody else. Now everybody's going to come shocked by you, and what happens to everybody else? The Chum say, on the contrary, should be remembered for good. Because the Gemara explains what happens, it actually explains briefly over here, the Gemara explains, based on the Gemara, what happens is like this. The wholesalers then are going to sell more cheaply. If they see that the retailers, the stores, are selling more cheaply, then they're going to also lower their prices. And then that way, it makes it easier for everybody to buy. But Rashi also focuses actually on Otsurei Peiros. Now you have like this. The Gemara mentions in a number of places, we're going to have a lot about it in Bava Basra, Be'ez Hashem, that you have, especially during times of scarcity, people would hoard produce so that then they could sell it at inflated prices. If I'm the only one in town who has a stock of grain, then I can name my price for it. So now you want to discourage that as much as possible. So now when the storekeepers lower their prices and that causes the wholesalers to also lower their prices, now anybody who's trying to hoard is going to say, well, you know what, I better unload it now before prices go even lower and I'm going to get next to nothing for it. I can't afford to wait until there's a shortage. So now that makes that there's more produce and more commodities available for everybody, and then things are much better for the economy.
Even though inflation, then you can inflate your prices.
That's the point. He wants to be able to cause inflation. But now when everybody else is deflating, then he has no choice but to sell. Yeah. Yeah. Next, lo yovaris agris in divrei Abashol. Abashol says if you're selling beans, you're not allowed to pick out the psoilus from them. So you have dried shells, you have dirt, you have various other things that might be mixed in with the beans. So Abashol says you're not allowed to, you have a bin full of such beans, you're not allowed to go and pick out the psoilus and then sell it as, now look, I'm selling clean beans. Why? Because the thing is like this. It looks really nice now. When you have the beans without any psoilus mixed in, it looks really nice. People are going to be prepared to now you're going to charge a higher price. Now fine, of course you're entitled to charge a higher price for your labor, but the point is now you're going to jack up the price more than the amount of the labor that you put in, much more than the amount of the labor and everything that you put in. Because you're going to say, now it looks so nice, now I can more name my price for it. And so you're going to end up selling it at a much, like this, for example. Suppose, for example, that regular beans that have psoilus in them are going to sell for, let's say, I don't know, $5 a pound. Now you pick out the psoilus. It might take you it might take you an hour's time to do that. So fine, you'd have a right to charge, let's say, now $6 for it. But now you're going to say, wait, I can charge $7 or $8 or $9 because it looks so clean that people are going to see the cleanliness of it. They're not going to think yeah, but it didn't take them that long to take out all the psoilus, and therefore it's like getting an unfair advantage, says Abishol.
Why are we not giving the customer to make that decision?
Because
the itself could clean it up by itself.
That's true, but that's why the Chum say it's allowed, because the Gemara says, the Gemara brings from a Braisa, Rav Acha Matir B'Dover Hanira. Rav Acha says, when you have something that's visible to the eye, yeah, the customer can make his own decision. He can decide how much would it have been worth, how much would my time have been worth to pick out all that refuse versus the storekeeper did it for me, how much am I willing to pay extra for that? But Abishol says that the customer may not realize, the customer may misjudge how long it took or whatever. Yeah. Now, they do both agree that you cannot pick off the refuse just from the top of the bin. Because that's just misleading the eye. Now they're going to think the whole thing is clean, and meanwhile, underneath the top layer, it's all dirty. Now, there doesn't seem to be much of a chiddush in that. The chiddush is, even if you tell him that, you know what, I only did the top layer, nevertheless, the first impression that the customer gets, the potential customer gets of it, is that it's all clean. And therefore, you're misleading him. Even if you tell him flat out, you should know there is refuse further down, he's going to go according to his first impression, and that's no good. That's what he gnevus das. The Mishnah finishes off, in Faukas in Loyasa Odom, Veloyasa Behema, Veloyasa Kaven. You're not allowed to beautify people, meaning avodim that are being sold for sale, or animals, or kalim. And the Gemara goes through a bunch of examples of what that means. Basically, the Gemara explains that when you have new items for sale, by all means, paint them and decorate them and do whatever you want, by all means, people want to buy new things that look nice. But when you have something old, and you're going to do mefarkasin to make it look nice and new, or you have something that's a scrawny animal, let's say, and you're going to do something to make it look bigger and fatter than it really is, you're not allowed to do that. That's cheating the customer. So in modern terms, it would be, let's say, for example, to take like an old car and slap a new coat of paint on it and pretend that it's new or something like that. So what do we mean by it's an odom? So the Gemara gives an example. Ahu Abdasava, there was an old slave, it was an Eved Kanani, because the story happened in the time of Rava and Rav Papa Bashmul, that's long after there were Avodim Ivriim anymore. So this is an Eved Kanani, a guy. But he was old, and nobody is going to want to buy an old Eved. De ozol tsave l'resho l'dikne. He went and dyed his hair and his beard, so he'd look young. Osol l'kamei de Rava, and he came to Rava offering himself for sale. Omalei zavnon. He says to Rava, would you like to buy me? You have to realize, by the way, I mean, you'd think, well, why would a person want to be a slave? First of all, he knows that Jews treat their slaves a lot better than the Goyim do, so if he has to sell himself, he'd rather have a Jewish boss. But besides that, also, Pashut, you know, a person, what's he going to do if not? He has no job at all. There's no social security. There's no Medicaid, no nothing back then. He's too old to work for himself. So, you know, so like this, being a slave might be his least worst option. Anyway, so he goes to Rava and offers himself for sale. On the way, but Rava tells him no. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, V'yu aniyim b'nei beischa. Poor people, poor Jews, should be members of your household. In other words, if I need help around the house, I'd rather hire Jews for the purpose. And that way, give parnosa to a yid. The Rambam brings this in Hilchos Avodim and mentions exactly that point based on the story that we see that's the correct thing to do. If you need help around the house, rather than getting a goyish cleaning lady or whatever, better to get a yid if you can help it. Also, Kamei to Rapapa Bashmul. So this Eved Kanani went to Rapapa Bashmul. Zavnei and Rapapa Bashmul didn't take into consideration what it says in Pirkei Avos. Maybe he thought it's only Mila de Chasidusa. Whatever the case, Zavnei and Rapapa Bashmul bought him. Yoimachad Omalei Ashyon Maya. One day he tells the slave, "Give me a drink of water." The guy didn't want to do that. Also, Chavrei Lereisho the Dikne. So he went and washed out the dye, and his hair and beard appear white again. Omalei, and now he comes back to his boss, and he tells him, Chazida, I'm not koshish ma'avuch. Look, I'm older than your father, meaning, in other words, it wouldn't be derech eretz stick for you. Fine, I'm a goy, but nevertheless, you're still supposed to show a shtickle derech eretz, even to goyish old. So therefore, it's not bekovod dick, it's not respectful to the age, to the elderly, that you should be using me as your slave. Yeah, and then some Marsha Abunz in this connection, a Gemara in Kedushin, that says that the mentions of the Rebbe Yochanan would stand up even in honor of Goyish old people. Yeah, so, because he would say, look how many life experiences they had, in their lifetime they had many opportunities to see Hashgacha Pratis and all that. Anyway, so here, Marsha says, we're talking about, he says, give me a drink of water, which isn't even that hard a job, and still he doesn't want to do it, and he's using the excuse that I'm older, that I'm even older than your father. So, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel applied to himself the pasuk. Tzadik mitzora nechlat. The tzadik is saved from trouble. This refers to Rava. Rashi explains, Rava saved himself from trouble like this, basically. Now I have an eved. What am I supposed to do with him? I lost my money. Rava was saved from that by realizing to follow what it says in Pirkei Avos and not hire you and then not buy you as a slave. Vayove acher tachtav, and an acher, another one comes instead of him, by which he means himself. The actual pasuk says Vayove rosha tachtav. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel is not going to call himself a Rosha. He's not a Rosha for being over on what Pirkei Avos, so he altered the pasuk to say Vayove Acher Tachtav instead. Then Yehoyada says, actually, there may have been another layer of meaning in it as well. He's referring, with the first half of the pasuk, he's also referring to himself. Yes, I just had a huge loss. I wasted my money on this guy, but nevertheless, the fact is that saved me potentially from a greater tzara. For all I know, the Eibishter had some greater tzara for me, and now I hashpored it by going through this minor tzara of having bought this useless Evan. So the first half of the pasuk could refer to himself also, but the point is, in other words, that he realized I should have followed what Rava says. So I should have followed what Rava says, and ultimately what the Mishnah says, V'yu ani im b'nei beischa, and I would have been much better off. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula, Yod Kislev Chagag Gula of the Mitzvah of Rebbe. So the Mitzvah of Rebbe explains in Torah Chaim that like this: when the Jewish people are given under the power of a particular nation or a particular malchus, so what happens is first that nation becomes greater and a greater power than all the other ones. We see nowadays the United States is the latest example of that. As long as Bnei Yisrael are under their control, then they become greater and greater. We find that with Paro and Nebuchadnezzar, the Romans, and every generation. Why? Because every Golos, the Shechina goes with the Jewish people. Golol Adam Shechina Iman. It wouldn't be bekavadik for the Shechina to be in Golos by a lowly nation. Therefore, the Eibishter first makes that nation becomes a power, and then they get a large number of Jews. And so the Rebbe gives an example of that. We see, as long as the majority of Jews in the world, or at least the plurality of Jews in the world, were in Russia, then that was a superpower. Then when most Russian Jews have left, and now Russia is much less of a something, and the United States, which now has the Roiv Binyan and Roiv Minyan of the Jewish people in the world, is the great power.
Which are Poland, where they left.
Yeah, you have Poland, you have many examples, you have Spain before the Inquisition, you have many, many examples of that in Jewish history where they had enormous number of Jews and they were the great power, and then they expelled their Jews and then they became a nothing, yeah.
So China has no chance.
I guess not.
No chance for China.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about the point about Natilus Yadayim in the morning. We said there's two reasons. The niggler reason is because during the night you may have touched parts of your body that are covered, and therefore there's tuma on your hands, and therefore you have to wash them. And the other reason, and based on that, it would mean any time during the day that your hands are tuma, you should have to wash with a bracha. But the minig is not like that. The minig is that we only make Natilus Yadayim in the morning, because not so much because your hands are clean. We said because there's ruach tuma on the hands, because the neshama goes away at night, and now you need to re-bring that Kedusha of the Eibishter on you by washing, just like the Kohenim did, before they did the Avodah. Now, the Alter Rebbe continues, we should, though, show respect to the first opinion, Lamaisa, and that means when it comes to Davin Mincha or Ma'ariv as well, then also here we said that technically, according to the second reason, you don't necessarily need to look for water before Mincha Ma'ariv. If there's no water available, just wipe your hands on whatever is available in Davin, but in keeping, in deference to the Svara Rishona, where it's a matter of Tumah of the hands, because your Daim Astrani is hand, because your hands are always moving and they may have touched something that's Tameh, it's better to look for water for Mincha and Ma'ariv as well, even up to a Mila's way, but we're not going to make a bracha. Now, as far as that, though, even then, you don't need to actually wash from a keli. You can just kind of rinse your hands. You put your hands in water and move them around a little bit. And that would apply, even if it's not a whole keli, even if it's water in the ground, even if it's another revius, even if it's water that's possible for Natilus Yadayim for meals, because, again, Natilus Yadayim for davening, according to this way of looking at it, if it's only a matter of that your hands have to be physically clean, then you don't need a keli, you don't need somebody pouring it on you, it would be fine, for example, let's say there's a faucet that's open, you could put your hands underneath it, you wouldn't need kosher water, or all those other factors wouldn't be a factor. It is true, though, that when you're washing for Mincha and Ma'ariv, in keeping with this opinion, you do have to wash all the way, and you do have to wash your entire fingers up to the joint, up to where the fingers join with the palm, because that's when it comes to. So what happens is like this. When it comes to Natilus Yadayim for the meal, there's two different opinions in the poskim that the Alter Rebbe deals with. How much of your hand do you have to wash? Do you have to wash only your fingers, but not your palm of your hand? Or do you also have to wash the palm of your hand? So, following the first svara for washing before Mincha and Ma'ariv, you should have to wash at least your fingers. And following the second svara, what you do is to be yotze that as well. Take a little bit of water and rub your hands together with it, and that way you're yotze erchatz minikoy and kapay, and that way you're doing that, and that way you're yotze l'chol adeus when it comes to washing before davening.
Yeah, Is it the same thing, like, you know, washing
from Minchat Maghrib back in the morning? For? No, so that's the thing. Now, so that they're saying, when you wash Negel Vasu in the morning, you definitely have to wash your whole hand, and you definitely have to make the bracha on the Tilas Yadayim. The rest of the day, according to the first opinion that he had brought before, you should also have to wash your whole hand, and you should also have to stay on the Tilas Yadayim, because you're doing it because your hands may be tummy or dirty. But according to the second svara, that it's strictly a matter of ruach ra, that ruach ra comes about only when a person is sleeping. Now, does it apply when a person is napping during the day? So there's different opinions whether it would apply when a person is napping in the middle of the day. Would he have to wash when he gets up? There was a story involving a Hillel Parasher and the Alter Rebbe, from which it comes out that in fact, if a person naps in the middle of the day more than the amount that's considered sleep in halacha, which is a half hour or more, then he taka should wash when he gets up. The story is over there that Rebbe Hillel wanted to hear Torah from the Alter Rebbe, but he was and wasn't able to, and because he hadn't washed his hands after a nap, I don't remember the exact pratim, but that's the gist of it. In other words, we learned from that story that you do have to wash, in fact, there is a degree of ruach ra on the hands when a person naps during the day as well, and therefore, based on this, you have to wash as well. But again, you don't have to wash your full hands, and you don't have to make a bracha, because the ruach ra is primarily only at night. So the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that the Gemara also mentions this point of Ruach HaTumah, and that it doesn't go away until you wash your hands three times alternately, which is why, Taka, this is why Negel Vasu in the morning, we wash three times alternately, as opposed to Netilas Yadayim for bread, where we do three times consecutively on each hand. Then he goes on to say there's a bunch of other things that it says in the Gemara that a person has to be very careful not to touch before with his hands before he washes his hands. He shouldn't touch his eyes, his ears, his nose, his mouth, his piatabas, his rectum, or a place where he let blood, or his male organ in the places where you're allowed to touch, or even you have water that's in a barrel or a tank or whatever that everybody else is going to use for Netilas Yadayim. Don't touch any of those before Netilas Yadayim, so you're not metame them with your hands. And then for that matter, when you're washing itself, don't touch the water in the keli, because you'll make them tame, because the only way it's metaher is by pouring. So this is why when you do Negel Vasu in the morning, the minhag is to hold it with a towel so that you don't accidentally touch the water and make a tummy.